This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 10th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. File this under not breaking news. Winter continues. Snowfall amounts around northwest Arkansas yesterday approached 2 feet, the highest official totals around 23 inches in places like Siloam Springs and Gentry. Records for 24-hour snowfall anywhere in Arkansas. Then early this morning, record lows. Readings at least as cold as 17 below zero, smashing not just records for this particular date, but becoming the coldest ever temperatures recorded in some spots of the region. Coldest ever. Most residents in northwest Arkansas have yet to venture out after the historic storm of 2011. That is, unless you have to go to work or are saving people stranded by the weather. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports on what compels drivers to venture out into impossible winter conditions, and often without the right equipment.
My equipment happens to be a Toyota four-wheel drive truck loaded down with cut firewood for weight, which I take out this morning to survey the scene, buried in deep, white, powdery snow. The sun's out, making everything sparkle, but it's still way below zero and not much traffic yet. One guy's crawling along center in his truck with a grin on his face.
All right, I'm Adam Cogbill, 21 years old. Drive a four-wheel drive 2005 Toyota Tacoma, a real hoss machine driving around in this madness. I work at the Outdoor Center at the University of Arkansas, so I'm an advocate of the outdoors. I couldn't just not get out and play in this awesome weather. Just having a great time living it up.
How many people have you helped get unstuck?
I'm on my way to get somebody unstuck right now, actually.
You have front-wheel drive or four-wheel drive?
Front.
How's it working out?
Very well. Don't know how to drive in it, yeah.
And have you gotten stuck anywhere?
Nope.
But this white Ford Ranger pickup ain't going nowhere.
Nope, that's not working. Nope. She's stuck.
That's because when the driver accelerates, only one rear wheel spins, providing no traction in 2 feet of snow. Ironically, this truck belongs to AutoZone. It's the delivery truck. It's an auto parts store on the corner of College Avenue and Lafayette in downtown Fayetteville. Kirsten Waldeck is part sales manager for AutoZone.
Yeah, that's our delivery trucks.
So talk about your delivery truck being stuck.
Well, my delivery truck is stuck because it's two-wheel drive. There's not enough weight in the back, and it's not designed to be driven on ice and snow.
It's actually got one wheel that engages, not two wheels in the rear. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a difference of locking and not locking differentials. If the differential is designed to lock, then you have two wheels that'll engage. If it's not, then you only have one.
And
one wheel grabbing the road and trying to push a large vehicle, it doesn't do very much.
Do you think people, unless they purchase a four-wheel drive or a front-wheel drive, have any idea that they might only have one wheel drive on there?
No. I fully believe that people who think that they have rear-wheel drive, that both of those wheels are pushing their vehicle in a forward motion or a backwards motion, but they don't. It's just the one unless you have that locking differential. And the locking differential is a newer thing. I'm not quite sure which year they started coming out with it, but it's a new technology.
Well, and what kind of, you've been out and you're seeing stuck cars. What are the most chronic makes of cars that are stuck?
Chronic makes of cars that I've seen stuck have been two-wheel drive pickups, rear-wheel drive minivans. Don't drive your minivan. and there's been some front-wheel drive little Toyotas and Hondas and so forth, and they're underpowered, they're too light, they're not designed for this either.
And business is good this winter.
Business has been good, minus the not being able to get in with the 2.5 feet of snow.
Nope, that's not working.
So for now, if you don't have front-wheel drive or four-wheel drive or that new locking two-wheel drive differential, stay home or walk. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The snowfall amounts in northwest Arkansas over the past 24 hours are record-breaking. We're in unusual territory here. So questions abound, including, what does that much snow mean for my roof? The Federal Emergency Management Agency is reminding people to be on the lookout for potential roof problems, though Robert Alvey, a spokesman for FEMA Area 6, says it's difficult to speculate about the potential risks from community to community.
There's no way of knowing individually or even within a community whether or not there's the threat of roof collapse. However, with the extent of snow that the area received and the heaviness of that snow, FEMA and Adam, the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management, felt it wise just to remind folks that they need to take caution when it comes to snow on roofs.
And there are signs that you can see from inside that maybe you have a problem developing?
We really encourage individuals to talk to their local officials about the steps that may be taken to identify a potential problem. In addition to doing that, you know, just kind of viewing the roof externally and inside, listening for any strains that may be occurring in the structure. We just encourage everyone to be aware of the potential for this and to protect themselves and their families.
And some of those signs that I've seen before talk about sagging roofs or a severe roof leak, things that are pretty noticeable.
Correct.
The best advice, perhaps, though, is don't get on the roof and try to brush the snow off.
We're not encouraging anyone to take any specific action, and I can tell you personally that I would not get up on my roof to try to clean it off with snow on the roof. The potential there is an unknown, and I'm not sure that I would not want to take the risk, but I certainly would want to be aware of it, track it, keep an eye on it to see if there was a problem that was evolving as a result of the storm.
Robert Alvey is a spokesman for FEMA Area 6. FEMA says other signs there might be a roof problem include sprinkler heads that have dropped down below ceiling tiles, doors that pop open, doors or windows that are difficult to open or close, and or creaking, cracking, or popping sounds. FEMA further says if these signs of roof distress are present, the structure or the portion of the building that is affected should be evacuated. The cold, snowy weather that has swept through the listening area has been record-breaking for many reasons, including for a local electric power company. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report.
When temperatures start dropping, many homeowners start cranking up their heaters in an effort to stay warm. On February 4th, AEP Southwestern Electric Power Company reached an all-time winter peak load as customers used about 4.6 million kilowatts of electricity. A kilowatt is the electricity required to burn 10 100-watt light bulbs. Peter Main is a spokesman for SWEPCO.
The entire amount of electricity that is consumed at any one point in time is called the electric load, and that's the amount of electricity that we are required to supply. So we measure that load in kilowatts or sometimes in megawatts, the larger amount. And we are typically what we call a summer peaking utility, meaning that the maximum amount of electricity that we provide at any time of the year occurs usually in August, and that's still the case. However, we do set winter peaks as well, which are not as high as the summer peaks. And in this case, we do have, from last week, a new winter peak.
SWEPCO serves more than 504,000 customers in parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas. When the record was set at 9 a.m. last Friday, the average temperature across the power company's service area was 26 degrees. The previous record was broken 2 days earlier when the average temperature across the company's 33,000 square mile service area was 21 degrees. Prior to that, a record winter peak load of approximately 4.5 million kilowatts had been set on January 8, 2010, when the average temperature was 20 degrees. Main explains that as a regulated utility, they are required to meet the needs of their customers, whatever that may be. In order to accomplish this goal, the company tries to prepare when changes in the weather are expected.
We look at forecasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week throughout the year. We're always looking out ahead to see what the weather forecasts are, to see what our load forecasts are. and to have an idea of what generating units we have to have available, what transmission lines we have to have available, what power resources we have to have available to serve our customers, and that's our whole power generation and dispatch operation is designed to have the right amount of power available to meet the need when it's needed.
The new record demand is 8.3% higher than the company's projected customer load for this winter. When customer power usage exceeds the company's projections, Maine says SWEPCO does have some options.
If the needs are greater than what we have projected, then typically we would either increase our generation or we would have the ability to purchase energy on the market. So there are a lot of different alternatives that you have as a utility to meet the needs of your customers.
Energy and money-saving tips are available at SWEPCO.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Yesterday afternoon, when the snow was still falling in downtown Fayetteville, a family, armed with shovels and other tools, showed up across the street from our new studio and began clearing the sidewalks at the Fayetteville Public Library. Microphone in hand, I trudged across Mountain Street to talk to Sam Palmer and the three children with him. Sam Palmer, what are you doing?
We are trying to shovel out of all this snow that's come down the ground.
Now, is this your family?
This is my daughter Ashley. This is my son Samuel. My other daughter, Micah.
Well, why did you decide to get out of the house and clear this sidewalk?
Well, we've all been trapped for almost 2 weeks now, haven't we? Yeah, we've been. We just wanted to get out of the house and help shovel the snow and get it cleared off here at the library.
Why did you pick the library?
Well, actually, I work here at the library, so I'm the facilities director here. And whenever we get too much snow and it's too much for me to do, my kids volunteer to come down and help.
Kids, look, can I talk to them? All right. Now, Ashley, your dad said volunteered. Now, when I was a kid and I got volunteered to do something, sometimes that meant I was told, sometimes it meant I really wanted to. What's the story?
My dad asked if we wanted to come to the library and shovel the snow off the sidewalks.
And what do you have here? This is what got my attention. This is some sort of...
It's a snowblower.
All right. Who runs that?
Anybody can. My dad usually does.
All right, Sam, you got a big smile on your face. Do you like doing this?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you come out to shovel snow?
This is about the second time.
All right. Have you ever seen snowfall this much snow at one time?
No.
And Micah, how old are you?
11.
11. Do you enjoy the shoveling?
Yeah.
Okay, now you guys have already been working for a while and working hard, and you've got a little space cleared here. If you look down here, there's a lot of work to go.
A lot of snowmen.
Have you ever seen snow this deep?
No.
Are you going to get the whole thing done?
We're going to do the whole thing today. We'll probably have it all cleared off by late this afternoon.
Are you a native Arkansan?
I'm not. I'm originally from Arizona, so I don't see much snow like this.
It's rare for us, but...
Much more rare for me in Arizona, that's right. But I've been here long enough, I claim this is my home.
So the family that shovels together...
Stays together.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And thanks for clearing the walk.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, guys. Sam Palmer and his children, Ashley, Sam, and Micah, were shoveling snow on the Fayetteville Public Library sidewalks yesterday afternoon. For the record, they completed the task, though the library is closed today because of the poor traveling conditions. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, a website devoted to politics, business, and more for Western Arkansas and the rest of the state. Michael, how are you doing on this cold day?
Well, I'm doing well. Just not sure. I thought I lived in Arkansas, not Michigan, but oh well.
Well, between record-setting snowfalls and near record-setting lows, it doesn't seem like the South at all, does it?
Not at all.
Let's see. Looking ahead, let's get past this winter weather. Looking ahead, it does look like there will be an election dealing with the proposed food tax in Fort Smith.
Yes, sir. It's likely, although it won't be official until possibly as early as this Tuesday, February 15th, when the Fort Smith Board of Directors decides on an ordinance, if they decide. That's the earliest. But this board has been they've kicked this can down the road now for 10 years, so I refuse to predict anymore when they will actually make a decision. But it could be as early as next Tuesday, February 15th, that they would decide to put a 1% prepared food tax to voters to help support the convention center funding here in Fort Smith. There was a possibility, you know, that a hospitality tax can be enacted by ordinance or by a vote of the people, and there was some division among the folks in Fort Smith as to what they preferred.
If it does, in fact, go to the voters and on the ballot, I would expect a spirited campaign between then and Election Day.
Right. Well, you know, just the discussion's been pretty darn spirited. So I would think you're right. Yes, you're right. It's going to get much more spirited with tons of information and misinformation for voters to sift through. It'll be, and I think the earliest date, if they decide next Tuesday, the earliest date could be April 12th. For an election.
On Thursday, February 24th, at the Holiday Inn City Center in Fort Smith, there will be a hearing discussing the possible closure of a mail processing center in Fort Smith.
Right. This is this is another interesting development. Back in early December, the Postal Service yet again said, we're going to study moving Fort Smith operations, the mail processing center anyway, to Fayetteville, to the Fayetteville Center. And in the past, that's drawn quite a fuss with our, you know, congressmen and senators asking the Postal Service to do something different. And I still find it interesting, Kyle, how we often say, well, the federal government needs to cut back and needs to be smaller. And then when they say, okay, we're going to cut back and consolidate, they're like, whoa, no, not here, not where we live. But all that being said, look at the weather we've had recently. If that mail processing center had been moved from Fort Smith to Fayetteville, how many days of delay would Fort Smithians have to get their mail just sent from one side of the city to the other, because they would have to go to Fayetteville and back, and the roads aren't quite conducive to that. They may not be for several days. So that brings an interesting dynamic to this as they announce they're going to discuss it on February 24th.
What will this hearing mean, do you think? I mean, you can have a hearing. Is it possible that it could sway opinion with the USPS?
You know, who knows? In their statement, they put out rescheduling this hearing. This was originally supposed to be heard January the 11th. But in their statement, they noted, and I quote, initial study results support consolidating some mail processing operations that are currently being performed in Fort Smith by taking advantage of available processing capacity at the Fayetteville Processing Center. So, you know, the study, you know, maybe one of these things, they've already made up their mind. They're just going to give citizens the opportunity to feel like they're having some input, but we'll know February 24th. You know, I've heard from some of the postal union. They're trying to try to get as many people to this hearing, which will be held at the Holiday Inn City Center here in downtown Fort Smith. But I'll be surprised if it's a light crowd there, Kyle.
Well, you know, Fort Smith has a well-earned reputation for rallying behind certain things, whether it's bringing the Marshall Museum in or trying to keep jobs in the city. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people there.
Right. You know, yeah, and they rallied to save the 188. Yes, and as you noted, get the Marshall's Museum. So we'll see. You know, they're the mail processing center, you know, it's not as close to the heart, though, I would argue, as the Marshall's or a 188, because there's a growing number of people, and I'm probably one of them. I can't tell you, Kyle. I maybe use a postal service 5 or 6 times a year. Most of mine's email or FedEx or whatever. So I'm not sure this is as close to the heart as maybe it would have been 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, speaking of close to the heart, for some people, there is a grove of trees on the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus that's close to their heart.
Yes, it's a line of loblolly trees that are a little over 50 years old that the university is going to cut down to make room for a library extension, and there are some folks, and they're remaining anonymous because they're university faculty, and I suspect they fear their jobs if they raise too much hell about this publicly, but they are trying to get a petition going to stop the university. It doesn't look like the university is going to stop. They've already invested money into their library design, and they're moving forward. Probably have a groundbreaking sometime in mid-March, and they'll get moving on it in April. But It's another emotional issue. 50-year-old trees. It's an impressive stand of trees too that splits the campus. The story behind those trees is that, you know, years ago, some of the academic types on the campus weren't that happy with some of the technical, you know, the tech education that was taking place. So what they did is they planted this line of trees to separate the more academic elements of the community college then from the technical trade skills. But they've kind of become an institution, but that institution is going to go away here soon unless somebody changes their mind.
Well, all the things we've talked about today might have some changes in the next few days. You'll keep us up to date on the City Wire?
Yes. We'll definitely be staying on top of these, especially the convention center issue. That has become a very passionate and personal issue among folks. So we'll be on top of that.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that keeps track of business, politics, culture, and much more in Western Arkansas and the rest of the state. Michael, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Well, you're welcome, and stay safe up there.
I will. Thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is PJ Hrabowski, music director at KUAF, host of Film Score Friday every Friday from 10 until noon. Welcome back.
Thank you, Kyle.
Couldn't be here last week because of the snow, but you said, dadgummit, you're coming in this week.
I know. I just, you know, hell or high water. Or snow.
There you go. And so there will be Film Score Friday tomorrow.
That's right. There will be Film Score Friday tomorrow.
And you're going to feature music from Lost Weekend.
Yes, I am, Kyle. You know, it's another great film noir. And Billy Wilder, who was also had to do with Double Indemnity.
The last movie we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Right. He bought a copy of The Lost Weekend, which was a novel dealing with alcoholism, written by Charles Jackson. He got it to read on a train trip from California to New York, and by the time he made it to New York, he decided he wanted to make a film. Well, he asked Paramount, and for some reason, he was like their golden-haired boy. You know, anything he said, they'd go, hmm. Well, this time they said, okay, again. But it was after he convinced them that there would be a powerful love story involved. And so, since it's the weekend before Valentine's Day, you know, I thought The Lost Weekend about, you know, an alcoholic spending a mm-hmm. bad weekend would be a good Valentine's Day
sure.
love story. but it also had to have a somewhat hopeful ending. Well, just like Double Indemnity, the production code was, again, not too hot on daring material. Realistic scenes of alcoholic dementia would have to be toned down, or the Hays office would never approve it. Now, the Hays office was Hollywood's chief censor. His name was Will H. Hays, and they named the whole production code after
right.
him.
And this was not a negotiable situation.
No.
Whatever the Hays office said went, and if you defied them, your movie would not be seen.
Right. But besides the Hays office, they had an even more powerful adversary. That was the liquor industry. For some reason, the liquor industry wasn't too hot on it.
They didn't want millions of Americans seeing Ray Milland throw his life away
no.
because of booze?
For some reason, they thought it was bad business.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Apparently, they survived.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Yeah. Probably doing well this week. Funny drunks in movies was totally acceptable. W.C. Fields,
sure.
you know, thing. That was funny. And now Wilder had to convince moviegoers that being an alcoholic was in no way funny. Well, here's how Wilder described the drinker in his movie. He said, "You will be asked to pity him. He will be neither a comic nor a disreputable character. He doesn't stagger. He's a dignified man. We play him lightly, even brightly at the start. It isn't until his brother tells his girl that he's a hopeless alcoholic that you begin to sense the seriousness of the case." That's how Wilder wanted the character portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Buddy De Silva, who was a Paramount executive, convinced the director that audiences might accept the alcoholic if he were played by a very handsome leading man.
And he was.
Yep, Ray Milland. Now, Milland was going, nah, I don't know if I want to play a drunk. But De Silva ordered him to play the part, so he had no choice.
This was back in the days of contracts.
That's right.
You were signed to a studio. They told you what to do.
Exactly. And Jane Wyman accepted the role of Milland's girlfriend. But first, Jean Arthur and Katharine Hepburn turned the part down. So Wyman accepted, and it turned out very well for her. Now, the preview of The Lost Weekend, Kyle, was a disaster. Miklos Rocha remembered that the film had, and he said, a disastrously inappropriate temporary score. The opening shots of the New York skyline had some jazzy, xylophonic, Gershwin-esque music, and the music just terribly misrepresented the movie that so badly that when Milland was fumbling outside his window mm-hmm. for the bottle of booze he had hanging out there, people roared with laughter. Well, then they began to leave when they realized the movie was serious. And Rocha explained to the production folks that the music made the movie a flop.
Now, had he created that first score?
No, he had not.
Okay.
No, I don't even know where they got the first score. No, but he said, you know, what are you doing? At first, I had read several things that said there was no score, but it was just, I think they just threw in music. You know, I mean, there was no particular
from the archives?
Score. Yes, yeah, there was no score written for the movie. Well, though Paramount considered shelving the $1.3 million production and the liquor industry secretly offered to buy and destroy the negative, right, Billy Wilder prevailed with help of film score composer Miklos Rocha and an electronic instrument we like to call the theremin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with this brand new score, The Lost Weekend was a box office hit, and its title became a popular catchphrase.
Oh, you still hear people reference it.
What, like, I had a lost weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he had a lost weekend. Well, ironically, it won Oscars for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay. Though Rocha was nominated for Best Score, it went out to Spellbound, a score written by Miklos Rocha.
So he won.
Yes, yeah, he won anyway. He was nominated for both. Well, in the score, The Weekend Begins opens the suite with Prelude, which immediately grabs the tragedy of the drama and New York skyline as the camera pans across the familiar locale, finally homing in on the apartment window of Don Bynum. Well, as he reaches for that whiskey bottle hanging outside his window, the eerie sound of the theremin makes its first very brief appearance.
We often talk during these conversations about film scores that really helped make the movie. Or it sounds like this film score saved this movie.
It did save the movie.
And it might not have been seen by anybody had Rocha not created this score.
Yeah, they were definitely planning on shelving it. Mm. But you know, they said, Rocha, can you save it? And he did. It was just so funny that it lost out to Best Film Score since it saved the picture.
This was just on Turner Classic Movies within the last 10 days. And there's a poignant scene where Ray Milland, where you really see he's hitting rock bottom, and he needs money to buy more booze.
Oh.
And he looks around for something to hawk. He's a writer.
Right.
And he picks up the typewriter. And that is at the point you realize that his life is just spiraling out of control.
That and the mess in the liquor store.
Yes, yes.
And the thing that I find hard to believe in the movie is the end, where it's like, okay, I've had my lost weekend. Everything's going to be okay now. And I'm going to write. And I'm going to, you know, write the great American novel and everything's going to be great. And I thought, wow, that's too bad everybody can't do that.
Right. So Lost Weekend will be featured. What else you got?
We have Master and Commander. Mm-hmm. Also, The Rocketeer, the movie kind of a little corny, the mm-hmm. music by James Horner. Also, Romeo and Juliet in honor of Valentine's Day. The Great Train Robbery by Jerry Goldsmith. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Hawaii. Mm. And The Italian Job.
Oh, I love the score to The Italian
Me
Job.
Me too. John Powell wrote that.
All right, PJ. Well, that'll be tomorrow morning from 10 until noon.
That's right.
Stay warm.
Thank you, Kyle. You too.
This is Ozarks at Large. Green Zine, an Arkansas-based quarterly online magazine for eco-enthusiasts, is announcing this week that it's going monthly and collaborating to stage the second annual Real Green Expo this spring in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spoke with the publisher, and she brings us this story.
We got Mother Earth News, Permaculture Magazine, Living Green, BioCycle, E-Magazine, The Ecologist, Earth Island Journal, all enduring periodicals dedicated to the environment. And now we have Green Zine, a tree-less, monthly, carbon-neutral online magazine just for the natural state. Professional journalist Janie Pritchard-Clark began publishing Green Zine a year ago as a regional paper magazine. Demand so good and her conscience so high, she's upped editions from quarterly to monthly and is covering the entire state electronically. No paper. And she wishes to be very clear about one thing.
Okay, so I am not doing the analysis. What I discovered is that I do not know very much about green and sustainable anything. And the more I talk with people, the more I realize they don't know anything about green and sustainable. It's really held into small groups. This person understands energy. This person understands wind. This person understands packaging. This one's into food. And it's not really coming together all in one place. So I wanted to have those people share their knowledge with us en masse.
So Pritchard Clark admittedly has a low EQ. That's environmental quotient, much like your IQ, a subject which readers can explore for themselves on Green Zine. As such, she aggregates content for her readers from established websites like planetgreen.com and publishes original articles from regional writers with high EQs, like local sustainable energy expert Melissa Terry and sustainable architect Michael Lally with Treadwell Institute. Green Zine also profiles green activists and entrepreneurs from our region and state.
Green Zine is an online magazine, so we really do stories, profiles, showcase, features, all the things that you find in a traditional print magazine, except it's online. And so we research and write stories. We talk to experts. We have experts writing for us. We tap into as many resources as we possibly can to know what's going on, who to ask, what's happening. How do we share this information with the public?
Open the electric pages of Green Zine, and you will see a simple grass-colored masthead containing links to the Green Scene, Green at Home, Green at Work, Eco Travel, Green Entertainment, and how to measure your own green EQ. Green Zine counts around 5,000 opt-in subscribers, including professionals in the building trades, educators, students, activists, retailers, and consumers. And subscribing is free, by the way.
The landscape that differs from print is that we can connect you online from the story to anywhere you want to go. Anywhere that we can take you on the web, we can take you. So you could be reading a story about KUAF, and we can tap you right into a podcast and bring you right to your website where you can open up a podcast on something we're talking about. And that, the feedback we have gotten is that people love to be able to have that instant journey to whatever else is interesting to them.
Hyperlinks are clearly embedded in Green Zine's pages, which are not cluttered with noisy advertisements. And in case you miss an edition, the homepage, filled with relaxing white space, shows cleverly illustrated cover links to previous issues. The February issue is packed with articles covering a natural cloth baby diaper service, managing your home hazardous waste, improving your indoor winter air quality, a story on green NWA business initiatives, and a monthly local heroes feature this month on Abraham's fourth grade class. Green Zine also covers ecological initiatives being vetted in the Arkansas legislature and welcomes all contributions.
Well, our magazine is open to people who want to share their expertise, their work in a particular green and sustainable field, green commerce. There's a lot of stuff going on. So we really want to say, come write for us. Come share what you know. Come share what you're talking about at your roundtables and your conference rooms. Come share what you're talking about, you know, on your floor with the readers of GreenZine. Help educate us as a populace as to what's going on.
GreenZine, of course, is socially networked.
So we really are plugged into Facebook and Twitter. Groups like Green Drinks, which are active here in Washington and Benton counties. Green Drinks. Green Drinks is an organization of people that get together after hours, after work, and talk about whatever is on the topic green today, and they usually have a few drinks. We usually meet in a bar gin and tonics, gin and tonics and finger foods. The Green Drinks program is very unstructured. People just get together and have a conversation about what's on their agenda today. And it draws a real interesting crowd and real diverse crowd as well.
GreenZine's also a bit unstructured and evolving as it enters its second year.
So I am still learning. As a publisher, I am still learning. People are talking to me about what's important to them and what do they know and what do they want to know and how do they go find the information. And I feel like it's my job as a publisher to be the channel, to put it all out in a very objective, easy to understand, easy to access way so people can get what they need, whatever that happens to be.
The magazine's also now the official publication for Real Green Conference and Expo, the second one to be held in Rogers this spring.
And this is very exciting development for this year. The Real Green Conference and Expo is a collaborative between the American Institute of Architects, Arkansas chapter, the U.S. Green Building Council, Arkansas chapter, and the Bentonville Chamber of Commerce. They usually all three have an annual green event. This year, they are collaborating and bringing all three together for one event, and we are the official publication. So we will be carrying all the stories of their speakers, events, developments. We're going to give you an inside look about what's going on behind the scenes at the expo itself or at the conference, and then we're going to do What Did We Learn magazine. After the fact, what did we learn at this Real Green Conference and Expo?
And what about that claim, GreenZine being a carbon neutral online magazine? Even though it takes electricity to run computers and print out the occasional contract and source material, publisher Janie Pritchard-Clark.
Carbon neutral is the term that the software platform that we use, they have been certified as carbon neutral. So we're writing their tagline. Everything has a carbon footprint.
Including this paperless broadcast, right? You can meet Janie Pritchard-Clark to pitch her ideas at the second annual Real Green Expo this coming May in the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the magazine and Real Green Conference and Expo, you can visit GreenZine.com. That's GreenZine.ar. GreenZine.ar.com. This is Ozarks at Large for a cold Thursday. I'm Kyle Callens. With me is Jody Beznoska. She is the Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. You made it in through the snow.
Yes, I'm changing my title. I'm now the official sled dog driver of Walton Arts Center.
Were you carrying coworkers about?
Yes, I'm sure that I'm one of the few that has a good car around here who can make it through the snow. But we've had some interesting couple of days, but we pulled it together, we hope.
Last night's Mamma Mia, understandably.
Yes.
Didn't happen, but
that's correct.
It is going to happen.
Yes, we got to reschedule it, which is really great, a little unusual. It's been rescheduled for a 3 p.m. matinee on Friday. That's tomorrow. Obviously, an unusual time to have a Broadway show, but because we have two performances on both Saturday and Sunday and the company has to leave for another gig the following day, we had to try to get it in on Friday. So luckily, we were able to. So they'll be a performance tonight at 7 o'clock of Mamma Mia. There'll be a 3 p.m. tomorrow, an 8 p.m. tomorrow, a 2 p.m. Saturday, an 8 p.m. Saturday, and a 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Sunday.
Wow. Whew.
Got them right.
Those folks will be working.
Yeah, they sure will. We actually, one of the reasons it took a while for us to, you know, figure out if we could have the 3 p.m. matinee was we had to go through all of the proper channels with the Actors Union and the Crews Union to make sure that we were within compliance and, you know, that we fed everybody and that we took good care of them. So they'll be doing 6 shows in a 3-day span. It's quite a bit.
Some other shows were lost over the weekend. Some happened.
Yes. We're hopefully settling in now. Yes. To, you know, with any luck, we'll have warm weather over the weekend and head right into next week, which is another busy week. Busy couple of weeks coming up just for all shows at Walton Arts Center. So Mamma Mia will close on Sunday, and then we'll have some kids shows coming in, a couple of rescheduled kids shows from last week's storm. And then we will have a performance on the 17th with Jubilant Sykes and Alan Chow, which we've talked a little bit about.
Yes.
This is in our 10 by 10 art series, so the bulk of those tickets are only $10. They'll be doing a program of Copland and American Spirituals, which is great. And because it's a 10 by 10, we'll have a pre-show conversation. Last week, I didn't know what the pre-show conversation was. This week, I happen to know that it will feature Dave Thomas, who is a local music producer and is going to help us talk about the history of Jubilant Sykes and Alan Chow. He works with them and the kind of music that they're going to be on stage performing. So that will be fun. So that is the 17th. And then we did have an event on the 18th that has been canceled. That was our Open That Bottle Art of Wine celebration. So that one is not happening.
Okay.
We've taken that one off the books completely. And then on the 19th, which is Saturday, we will have Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, you know, the last time they were in town was a night of a big snowstorm.
Indeed. Apparently, they bring snow with them.
Yes.
Hopefully, they're done after this year. But yeah, I believe it was one of those. I think it was a charity event where they were playing, and there was terrible ice, and very few people got to see them. And so the hope is that some of those people might come back and see them again. They're on our stage, and they're just fun. I remember loving them. There was this little blip of swing music renaissance when I was in college, and I remember taking swing lessons and hearing their music. And my parents actually stumbled across them at a concert at Disney World, and my father called me immediately and said, "Are these guys coming to Walton Arts Center? They're so great." So hopefully that will
good.
Hopefully
that's
that
the
will
18th.
Be fun. The 19th.
The 19th.
Actually.
The
19th. The 19th, actually. And before I get into the next week, I do want to make sure everybody knows that Theater Squared Sundown Town is running right now. And hopefully, weather permitting, will happen Thursday night and Friday through the weekend. But it runs for a couple more weeks, and I saw it last week, and it is remarkable. Really good. Live music, amazing performances. So you can get tickets to Sundown Town at the Walton Arts Center website. So it was a world premiere. Mm-hmm. It's the first time this fully mounted show has ever happened. And so I really hope people will come out and see it. It's great.
And that's at Nadine Baum.
That's at Nadine Baum Studios in the small theater. It's a beautiful set. It's very intimate. You're very close to the actors. And the music is live, performed by Three Penny Acre. And very... you can't get away from it. It's very realistic and real and kind of in your face a little bit, but it's fantastic. It's a really special show that I hope lots of people see because it's great. Talks about our history and it features our local actors and it's awesome.
Excellent.
So, and then we move into the following week on the 22nd of February, which I believe is a Tuesday. We have a whiskey tasting, also part of the Art of Wine. Art of Wine, whiskey.
Gotcha.
Apparently those go hand in hand.
Sure.
But the whiskey tasting began last year. It was hugely fun. And it's hosted by a guy who knows a lot about whiskey. He usually shows up in a kilt. And it's great. And you learn about all the different varietals. That's at 7 p.m. on the 22nd. And then on Thursday the 24th, we will have Beekman on the Brain, a show for kids and families.
Mm-hmm. He's in that line of Mr. Wizard and Bill Nye.
Yes.
But he's a little bit more, I don't want to say cartoonish in a bad way, but he's kind of more...
He's zany.
Zany.
Yes.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Zany is a really good word for him. You look at a photo of him and his hair standing on end, and that's a perfect summary for him.
Yes.
You know, he's pretty... he's pretty fun, you know, and we've had him before and he did very well. Audiences really enjoyed him. So that's on the 24th. And then, believe it or not, the Chieftains are coming on the 27th. I'm so excited for that one. You know, they're legendary and They haven't been here for at least 5 or 6 years, and so we're looking forward to that one. That I believe that's a Sunday performance. That's the 27th. And we actually next week on the – actually, no, tomorrow on the 11th. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's the 11th. We have a new show going on sale, Maceo Parker.
Who I described as someone who has played with the Holy Trinity of Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Bootsy Collins,
yep.
James Brown.
And George Clinton.
And George Clinton.
Yep. I think that one is going to be one that we really embrace around here. He's pretty exciting and, you know, funk, the king of funk in a lot of ways. So
Saxophone,
yep. And so that goes on sale Friday at 9 a.m. And you can go to our website, waltonartscenter.org, or you can call 443-5600. I do ask you to be patient because of the weather. So our box office staff gets a little limited and the phones get really busy. So if you can't get through, it's not because we don't love you. It's because we're just trying as hard as we can to field all those calls. And so with all of these cancellations and postponements, there's a lot of phone calls happening and all of those conversations take a lot of time. So just be patient with us. We will get to you eventually. And you can always buy tickets at our website at waltonartscenter.org.
Jody, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Kyle.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. SONA will perform its opening concert on Thursday, March 17th at Walton Arts Center. Conductor Paul Haas and musicians will perform pieces from Mendelssohn, Penman, and Brahms. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Grove, Oklahoma. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. We'll end the show, for obvious reasons, with music from Don McLean. I'll be back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Be safe, stay warm, have a great Thursday.
Winter has me in its grip. Think I'll take a summer trip on a sunny sailing ship, where the shells lie in the sand. I feel so lonely. I'm too young to feel this old. I need you.